Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Ksubas daf Yud Ches. We left off Yud Zayin Amud Beis on the first wide line at Velisnaya, which is the third word on the first wide line. First of all, today's shiur housekeeping. Today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children and Lila Nishmas, his mother, Golda Basimcha, and the Neshama Aben Aliyah. It's also sponsored by Yanki Schiffman and family, Lila Nishmas, his mother, Maris Sivya Bas Rav Yaakov, Alea Shalom, as your side is today, Chafei Tammuz, may her Neshama have an Aliyah as well. We thank both sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. So today we are going to cover two or three primary topics. Again, focusing mainly on the concept of Apesha Asar and also really Yisodistika Shas Sugyas that we're going to be covering today. So first, to sort of reorient us and set the table with respect to what we were discussing at the end of yesterday's shiur. So the first mission, the Perek, had concluded with a comment of Rabbi Yeshua, that a moda Rabbi Yeshua, that Rabbi Yeshua will agree to Rabbi Gamliel with the status or with the efficacy of a certain type of Apesha Asar, that Rabbi Yeshua admits that if somebody goes over to somebody else, let's say Reuven goes over to Shimon and says, Shimon, this field that I'm working, this field that I own, used to belong to your father, but I bought it from him, so he's gonna be believed. So Reuven's gonna be believed. Why is Reuven believed? This is the concept of Apesha Asar, because Shimon never would have known that the field belonged to his father to begin with. The only reason he knows is because of Reuven's taina. So just like Reuven is believed to say that the field initially belonged to his father, to Shimon's father, Reuven's also believed to say that he bought it back. And that's the concept of Apesha Asar. What we started discussing yesterday was, why do we add this little wrinkle that Reuven goes over to Shimon and says, this field used to belong to your father, and I bought it from you. Why don't we just say that Reuven goes over to Shimon and says, this field used to belong to you, and I bought it from you. So I should have mentioned that the Mishnah has also said regarding Apesha Asar, that if there were Edim that initially belonged to Shimon's father, then Reuven would not be believed to say that he bought it from Shimon. Why? Because the whole concept of Apesha Asar is that we never would have known that it belonged to the other guy without the taina of Reuven. And therefore, just like he's believed to say that it used to belong to the other guy, he's believed to say that he bought it back. If there are Edim that it used to belong to the other guy, then there is no Apesha Asar, because we know that it belonged to the other guy, not mikoach Reuven's taina, but because of the Edim. So our Gemara yesterday was trying to figure out why in the world we had to talk about a case where Reuven goes over to Shimon and says, this field used to belong to your father, and I bought it. Why don't we just say that this field used to belong to you, and I bought it? So we wound up saying yesterday, because if it were a case of Reuven and Shimon, and they were tining whether the field belonged to one of them or the other, then we wouldn't worry about Edom, we would actually worry about Chazaka, because we know that in order to be Muchzak in a field, in order to be established as the owner of a field, you have to have what's called a Cheskas Gimel Shanim. You have to work the field for 3 years. Once you have a chazaka that you've conducted yourself as an owner for 3 years, that field is going to be yours according to halacha. And so what we had said was, we can't be dealing with two people, Reuven and Shimon, who are talking to one another, because then we just follow the chazaka. If Reuven has a chazaka, the field is his. If Reuven doesn't have a chazaka, then the field is not going to be his. So the reason that we're talking about where the field used to belong to the father, the chiddush that we concluded with yesterday, is that there were shnei chazaka. Reuven did own the field. He did conduct himself as the owner of the field for 3 years. However, the problem was that two out of the 3 years were in the lifetime of the father, of Shimon's father. The third year of the Shnei Chazaka was after Shimon's father died. It was when only Shimon was alive, but the father was already dead. And the Chiddush is that a Chazaka like that, where 2 years are in front of the owner who would know in order to protest if somebody were squatting in his field, and the last year were in front of somebody who wouldn't know any better, because Shimon is a katan, and he doesn't know better, he doesn't know to be moche, he doesn't know to make a macha, he doesn't know to protest, that type of chazaka is not going to be a valid chazaka, and therefore, in that circumstance, the only reason that Reuven would be believed that he bought the field is not because of chazaka, it's only because of apesha asar. And that's why we're talking about a situation where the taina is that the field used to belong to Shimon's father and not that it belonged to Shimon himself. Now we're going to talk about, well, if the whole purpose for talking about that the field used to belong to Shimon's father was to teach me a halacha and chazaka, why are you teaching me the halacha and chazaka that a chazaka made on a field that used to belong to somebody's father is not a valid chazaka unless it's made in front of the father, teach me a more basic halacha about something that's called the chazaka shelo b'fanav. So the whole reason that a chazaka works, the whole reason that a cheskas gimel shonim is meaningful, is because we assume that if the owner of a piece of real property saw somebody else squatting in his field and behaving like an owner for 3 years, he would make a protest, he would raise his hand, and he would say, get out of my field. So the question is, what happens if the chazaka is being implemented in a situation where the owner is not there? Why is he not there? We're going to see in the Gemara. Where is he? We're going to see in the Gemara. We're going to see these circumstances, but the Gemara is going to talk about that. Like, why we don't talk about a regular chazaka shelo b'fanav? Why are we talking about a chazaka on a father's field made in front of a son? Then we're going to talk about, why are we talking about karka altogether? If the whole purpose of the Mishnah is to teach me the halacha, the din of apesha asar, where if I incriminate myself, I'm also believed to exonerate myself, why are we talking about karka? Why don't we talk about metaltalin? Now, if somebody says, I owed you, but I paid you back, there are two types of I owed you, but I paid you back. There's I owed you and I paid you back in full, and then there's that I owed you and I paid you back in part. That, of course, is the concept of moda b'miksas. So now we're going to tie the sugya into the sugya of moda b'miksas. We're going to talk about the psychology of a moda b'miksas and why and how that drives whether the moda b'miksas has to make a shvua, has to take a shvua, why we believe him for the shvua. And then we're going to get to a mishnah on Yud Chasam Abayz, and that mishnah is going to talk about kiyum shtaros. That mishnah is going to talk about a situation where there were eidim who were signed on a shtar, and we need a way to verify the signature of the Edim. So if the Edim themselves verify their own signature, since they're Mekayim the Shtar themselves with their own testimony, they're believed to say, oh, this is our signature, but when we signed under duress. We're going to see what type of duress we're talking about, but we'll save that for the Gemara. Whereas if their signatures are Mekuyam through other means, if their signatures are Mekuyam because the Beis Din can verify their signatures independently based on comparing the signatures on one shtar to the signature on another shtar, which is already Mekuyam and Beis Din, so their signatures are independently verified, then they want to come and say, oh yeah, we signed, but we were under duress. Now they're not going to be believed to say that they're under duress because this shtar is independently verified, is not verified on the basis of their own testimony. This is sort of a variant, if you will, of HaPeh She'asar. So again, let's pick up Yud Zayin Amud Beis. It is on the first wide line, Vilisnaya. So if the whole point of the Gemara is that we don't have a valid chazaka, or you're trying to teach me halacha about what a valid chazaka is, and therefore whether Reuven's going to be believed when he says that he bought the field from Shimon or Shimon's father, depends on whether he has a good pesha asar taina, says the Gemara, v'lisnaya b'didei, why don't we talk about the two guys themselves, v'lukme kagon sha'achla sh'tayim b'fanav, acha shalo b'fanav. And why doesn't Reuven have a valid chazaka? Because 2 out of the 3 years of the Cheskas Gimel Shanim, he was making the chazaka in front of Shimon, and the last year, he was not making the chazaka in front of Shimon. Ukagon Shabarach, the reason that Shimon wasn't there was because Shimon had to skip town. Says the Gemara, Barach Machmas Mai, why exactly did Shimon have to leave town? Ida Barach Machmas Nefashos, Pshitad Lo Mehemen. If Shimon's life were in danger, then of course he's not going to be believed, and of course Reuven is not going to be believed. Of course, the chazaka is not going to be valid, is what the Gemara really means to say. Because again, the whole point of Cheskas Gimel Shanim is that you were a muchzak in the field for 3 years when the owner could have protested. Now, if Shimon had to leave town because Shimon was a wanted man, and people were going to chase Shimon, and Shimon was afraid that somebody was going to kill him, of course that's not a valid chazaka because there was no way for Shimon to protest. Because the only way Shimon could protest is if he shows up. And if he shows up, he knows they're going to kill him. So of course, the chazaka is not going to be valid. So, delo matzimachi, because he couldn't have made a macha. Vida baruch machmas mama, and it says the Gemara, if he ran away because he owed somebody a lot of money, and he ran away because he was too much in debt, so he bailed lam chuye, then he should have been moched, and then the chazaka should be valid, even though one of the years was not in front of the owner, the chazaka should have been valid. Why? Dekaimelon, macha shalobafanav havi macha. Because the macha that is made even not in front of the person who is being machzik in the field is a valid macha. This is because of the concept of chavra, chavra islay, the chavra de chavra, chavra islay, because the word gets back. The rumor mill will churn and everybody will hear that, that Shimon made a macha. So what's the circumstance that Shimon is not here and it's not going to be and it's not going to be a valid chazaka? Says the Gemara. So we know, so the way that it would be a valid chazaka, even if Shimon is not here, is if he ran away because of mumminous issues, and if he ran away because of mumminous issues, he should have made a macha anyway, even though he's not here. It's not. Now, how do we know that a macha shalob afanav works? We have a Mishnah. Shalosh haratzos lechazaka. There were three different lands. There were three different regions for a chazaka. Yehuda, Vevar, Yarden, Vegalil. Haya b'Yehuda v'chzik b'Galil. If you were in Yehuda and somebody was making a chazaka on your property in Galil. B'Galil v'chzik b'Yehuda, or vice versa. Ein a chazaka is not going to be a chazaka. Ache imo b'Medina. Until they're both in the same region. If your property is in a region and somebody is trying to make a chazaka in that region and you're there also and you were not mocha and you didn't protest, then it's going to be a valid chazaka. If you were elsewhere, if you were in a different region in Eretz Yisrael, then it's not going to be a valid chazaka. But says the Gemara, what is the circumstances here? What is the scenario of Avinaba, Mike Savar? If a macha shalobafanav is going to be a valid macha, in other words, the owner does not have to come to the site of the field where the owner is and protest physically there. He could be mocha from wherever he is. So if the guy is being muchzak in Yehuda and the owner is in Galil, why is it not a valid chazaka? Why he should have been mocha? His macha in Galil should have traveled to Yehuda because a macha shalobafanav is a macha. Now, if you want to say no, the reason is because a macha that's not made in front of him is not a macha, and therefore, if the owner was in Galil and the chazaka was transpiring in Yehuda, it's not a valid chazaka because the owner wasn't there and the owner never could have protested. Says the Gemara, you don't have to be talking about two separate regions in Eretz Yisrael. Afilu Yehuda v'Yudanami. Even if both of the people were in Yehuda. But Yehuda is a big region in Eretz Yisrael. One person was in one city, and that's where he was being muksuk in the karka. The other person, the owner, was in another city in Yehuda. If the whole point is that macha shalob afanav lo avim macha, why do we have to talk about two separate regions? Just talk about when they were in the same region, but they weren't one in front of the other. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Mama, liolam ksavar macha shalob afanav avim macha. Really, we say that a macha shalob afanav is a valid macha. Umasnisa b'shas cherem shanu. And our Mishnah is in a time of, and our Mishnah is talking about a time of hostility. It's talking about a time of siege. And therefore, in a time of siege, again, the whole point, the whole reason that macha shalob afanav is going to be a valid macha is because word gets around. Chavra t'chavra, chavra islay. However, in a time of hostility where nobody is traveling between the various regions, then the word isn't going to get around. Because it wasn't like today where you could shoot off a WhatsApp and everybody knows everything. You actually have to physically go someplace. So the macha shalob afanav is going to work only when you are physically able to travel. When you're not physically able to travel, like in Shas Cherem, a macha shalob afanav is not going to work. Says the Gemara, Maishna Yehuda v'Galil d'nakat. However, why do we then say that because of Shas Cherem, if one of the parties is in Yehuda and the other of the parties is in the Galil, then the macha is not going to be then the chazaka is not going to be a valid chazaka because there was no way for the macha to get to you because of the hostility. If nobody is traveling, then why does it matter that the other guy was in another medina? Even if the guy is in the same medina, but in a different city, it also should not be a valid chazaka because he was not around, and because he was not around, there was no way for the macha to travel. Says the Gemara, turning to Yud Ches Amud Aleph, the Stam Yehuda v'Galil Kashas Cherem Damu. Now the chiddush is that the Stam case of Yehuda v'Galil is like Shas Cherem, and therefore we cannot assume that if a macha was made in a certain region of Eretz Yisrael, that it necessarily traveled to another region of Eretz Yisrael. So there are Rishonim who ask a stira, because in the Gemara Gittin it says that if somebody signs a get in Yehuda and then the get's presented in Galil, you don't have to say b'fanei nechtam. So the halacha is that you have to say b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam, where the writing of the get and the delivery of the get are in totally different places. But the question is, if what we're saying that Stam Yehuda and Galil is kashas cherem dami, that it's like considered to be a time of hostility and that there aren't people there who sort of recognize people from the other Medina, why is it that by a get isha, you don't have to say b'fanei nechtav u'b'fanei nechtam if the writing of the get was in Yehuda and the delivery of the get was in Galil? So the answer is, the Rishonim explain, because no, by the get, the woman is going to be mechapes achar edim. She's going to search out edim to be mekayim the get. And therefore, even though it's not that typical that people are traveling between these regions, she will definitely be able to find witnesses who could verify the signature of these witnesses on the get, because there are always people who are traveling, for example, Ole Regalim or whatever. So if you want to find a witness, you could find a witness. However, over here, where the guy who's being machzik on the karka is not going to search out a witness for somebody who's going to bear witness to the macha that the real owner was making in another region in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it's considered to be shas cherem. And therefore, the macha is not going to be valid, and as a result, the chazakah is not going to be valid. Says the Gemara. Okay, so now we've explained why we have to be talking about a case of mana la'avicha. But says the that karka la'avicha rather. But says the Gemara. But listening, Moda Rabbi Shua b'Yomer l'Chaveru, mana levisicha memcha operaticha l'chashu neman. Why are we talking about karka altogether? Why don't we say that Rabbi Shua admits where a person, Reuven, goes over to Shimon and says, I borrowed $100 from you, but I paid you back that he's going to be believed. Why do we have to talk about karka? Let's talk about metaltalin. Let's talk about money. So says the Gemara, Mishum the Gabay Libisne Seifa, because we have to learn the Seifa of the Mishnah as well. That Amyesh Edim Shulava Mimenu, if there were Edim that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, remember, because the end of the Mishnah was a situation where there were Edim. So if there were Edim that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, Vuam Operativ, and Reuven says that he paid back, Einan Eman, he's not believed, right? Because Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah says, if you have a Pesha Asar, if the only reason that we know that you owed somebody something was because you admitted it, then he is going to be believed. But if there were Edim, then you're not going to be believed, says the Gemara. But that's neged the halacha. That's against the halacha. V'akaymelon amalvas chavira be'edim. Einat zirach lavara be'edim. We know that if a person borrows money in front of Edim, if Reuven borrows money from Shimon in front of Edim, he doesn't need to pay back in front of those Edim. And if he doesn't need to pay back in front of those Edim, well then, it should not be the case that if there were Edim to the Alba, then Reuven is not believed to say that he paid Shimon back. He should be believed to say that he paid Shimon back, because the halacha is that even if you borrow money in front of Edim, you don't have to return the money and you don't have to pay the money back in front of Edim. And therefore, the halacha should be that he is believed. So says the Gemara, V'lisni modi Rabbi Shua b'amar l'chaveiro, but then why don't we talk about a situation as follows, that Rabbi Shua admits, where to the power of a pesha asar, where a person says to his friend, Reuven says to Shimon, mana l'avicha b'yadi, I borrowed $100 from your father, v'chaltiv pras, and I paid back half of it, shehu neman, that he's going to be believed. And Rashi explains, this is talking about a hodah b'miktsas, that he's claiming that he paid back half of the loan. And when the Gemara says shehu neman, Rashi explains that it means neman below shvua. Hoel ve'ein shar shachot lefanecha dashmin and rabusa de'afagav de'moda v'miktas pater hoel ve'ein atova. Now, you might be thinking, this flies against everything that we learned starting in the fifth grade when we started learning Gemara, because everybody learns that if somebody is moda b'miktas, he has to make a shvua. He has to take a shvua. That's called shvuas moda b'miktas. Over here, what we said is, Reuven goes over to Shimon and says, I borrowed $100 from your father, and I paid back half of the money. I paid back 50. It says neman. Rashi now tells me neman means neman below shvua. I, Reuven, zemoda b'miktas. How in the world is he going to be neman below shvua? The reason that he's neman below shvua is Rashi said that this is a case of ein shor shachot lefanecha. That, again, there was nothing that prompted him to admit that he borrowed $100 from Shimon's father. And that's the power of a Pesha Asar. That Pesha Asar is going to be powerful enough that even though throughout Shas we say that a person has to make a Shvuas Modeh B'Mitzvos, over here, because the only reason we know about the loan to begin with was the admission of Reuven, that's Pesha Asar, he's not going to have to take a Shvuah. Says the Gemara, hang on a second. Aliba Daman. According to whom does he not have to? According to whom does he not have to take a? Does he not have to take a shvuah? So ilema say aliba the rabbanon. If it's according to the rabbanon, hamri meisha v'aveda avi. So the rabbanon say that a meisha that a modem mixas is going to be a meishiv is going to be a meishiv aveda. And in other words, it's always like a meshiv aveda. In other words, and when somebody is being meshiv and aveda, you do not require a shvua. Rashi over here says the Rashi is probably about a third of the way down. Aliba daman. So Rashi just points out tanoi pligi ba milsa b'shvuas. And mesecha shvuas is a machlokas about this. V'yamar Rav Yishua hachi lo kachan minayuhu. Why di karabana na amri afilu tovo v'zeh modem mixas meshiv avedu. The rabbanan say that a modem mixas never has to take a shvua, because when the lender comes and is toveya his money, and the borrower says, oh, I paid back half, the borrower is considered as if he's returning a lost object. The Tanan b'shvuas, manalaba b'yadcha, ein l'cha b'yadi elecha mishem dinar, pater mishem shuka meshev aveda. Umayash minim Rav Yeshua, bein charshachat, afilo charshachat l'fan of nami neman. In other words, Rashi is saying that if it's the Rabbanan always hold that a modem mixas is a meshev aveda, and if a modem mixas where the guy says, oh, you owed money to my father, and then he says, yeah, but I paid back 50, if that's always a meshev aveda, then why would Rabbi Yeshua say that the only time he's believed without a shvua is if he is the one who admitted that he borrowed the money from his father? No, even if the Tovea comes and says to him, you owe money to my father, if he's modem mixas, that's like a meshev aveda. Says Rashi, via liba the Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, kilo tamanami ave shvua boy. And according to Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, he always is going to require a shvua. So who is our Mishnah like? Who is Rabbi Yeshua going like that he says that you don't require a shvua, but only where you're the one, you're the reason that we know that you borrowed money from the guy's father? The Rabbanan will always say it's like a meshev aveda. Rabbi Lazar is going to say it's never like a meshev aveda, and you're always going to be chayev in a shvua. Says the Gemara, now we're going to see later in the Gemara why it's like a Meshav Aveda, because there is a concept of Shvuas Modeh B'Mitzvos. So here the reason it's a Meshav Aveda is because the key is that the loan was allegedly taken out from the guy's father, and that's gonna be a fundamental difference, a fundamental distinction which is gonna come into play in a few minutes. So says the Gemara again, back in the Gemara, Aliba Daman, who's Rabbi Shua going like? Aliba the Rabbanan who Amri Meshav Aveda Avi. The Rabbanan said that the guy's like a Meshav Aveda, therefore he never requires a Shvua even without the Pesha Asar. Yeah, the Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, Amr Shvua boy. And if it's like Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, he says that we require him to take a Shvua. The Tanya, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov Omer, Padem Shadem Nishbal Tainas Atzmo. There are certain times where a person has to take a Shvua on account of his own Taina. Ketzad, what's that situation? Manela Abba Biyadi, Vechaltiv Pras. If a guy says, our case in the Mishnah, where a guy says, oh, I borrowed $100 from your father, but I paid him back 50, areze nishpa, that is, he has to take a shvua, v'zeu shenispa al tainas atzmo. And this is somebody who has to take a shvua on his own taina. V'chachamim omrim, and the chachamim say, eina ela kameshav aveda upater. And the chachamim say that he's like a meshav aveda, and he is going to be pater. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, lesley meshav aveda pater. The Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov not hold that meshav aveda is that meshav aveda is pater. So Rashi explains over here, Rabbi Lezer lesley meshav aveda pater min hashvua. Does he really say that meshav aveda is pater from shvua b'tmiya? Hatakanta derabbanani b'mesechas gittin hamotzi metzia lo ishava mipnei tikkun olam. That we know there is a mitzvah in the Torah of Shabbos aveda. If we were going to force everybody who's trying to perform a mitzvah of being Meshav and Aveda to take a shvua, that which he's returning is all that he found and that he didn't find anymore and that he doesn't owe anything else to this guy, you know what? Somebody's going to say, thank you, I don't need to do the mitzvah. Shkoyach, I'm not going to take it. Taking a shvua, we saw Masechta Shvuos, is a very, very intimidating is, or we will see in Masechet Shavuos, is a very, very intimidating, it's a very, very intimidating experience. And therefore, there is literally a takana derabanan that anybody who's meshev an aveda does not have to take a shvuah. And says Rashi, this is like a situation of Meshav Aveda. Again, Meshav Aveda is returning a lost object to somebody. If you are going over to somebody and say, and you say, I owed your father $100, but I paid back $50, that is the quintessential, that's the paradigmatic Meshav Aveda. You're returning literally a loss. Without you, the guy would never have had a clue that you owed his father $100. So now we're going to say that if you say that you owe the father $100, but you paid back $50, you're going to require a shvu according to Rabbi Elazar. What does he do with this concept of Meshav Aveda? Everybody knows that Meshav Aveda is potter. So how could it be that he doesn't know from that concept? So Amar Rav Betan O Katan. Because it's not Tainas Atzmo over here. It's not that he's volunteering. It's that the Katan, Shimon's kid, said, oh, Reuven, you owed my father $100. Says the Gemara, but we learn elsewhere that you don't take a shvua on the taina of a cheresh shote v'katan, because the pasuk that describes the shvua over here says v'chitin ish el re'eyu kesef okelim, and ish means an adult and not a katan. So says the Gemara, so my katan gadol. No, what does it mean, a katan? It means a gadol, that the gadol was being toveah him. The son of Shimon was being toveah him. V'amai kori le katan, but why does it call him a katan if he's a gadol? The legabe mi le daviv katanu, because physically he's a gadol. Halachically, he's an adult. However, he's coming with a taina that Reuven owed his father money. Now, a kid is... As mature as he is, doesn't know everything about his father's affairs, and therefore, legabe his father, he's considered to be a katan. Says the Gemara, but iyachi tanas atzmo tanas acherim hi. That's not tanas atzmo. The Gemara introduces by saying, sometimes somebody has to take a shvua tanas atzmo. What's the situation where Shimon's kid comes over to you and said, hey, you owed my father $100? That's not tanas atzmo. That's where somebody is making a taina against him. Says the Gemara, Tainas Atzmo Vadas, Tainas Acherem Vadas Atzmo. No, what we mean to say is that it's a taina that somebody else is making, and it's his own hoda. Says the Gemara, hello, Kulu Tainasai Tainas Acherem Vadas Atzmo Ninu. That is the case of Moda B'Mitzas. Somebody goes over to you and says, you owe me $100, and you say $50. Now, if you're going to tell me that is the prototypical situation of Moda B'Mitzas, And how can you say that this is like some sort of strength? This is not Tainas Atzmo. This is somebody else's Taina and your own Oda. That's what a case of Moda B'Mitzas is. So says the Gemara, Elahacha, but over here we're talking about where Toano Katan. And when we say that you're not nishpa on the taina of a katan, that's only where the katan says that he loaned you money. But over here, we're talking where the katan said that you owed his father money, that his father loaned you money. But the rabba kamifli, they're arguing about rabba. The yomar rabba, because rabba says like this, ma'amra torah. So why does the Torah say that moda b'mixas a taina yishava? That a person who's modem and mixas has to take a shvua. This is very yesodistic throughout Shas. Why is it that a person who is modem and mixas has to take a shvua? Because chazaka ain't the meyas panim of nei bal choba. We have a chazaka that a person is not going to be meyas panim in front of his bal choba. In other words, a person is not going to have so much chutzpah that if he owes somebody money and the guy claims you owe me money, that the guy's just going to reject it and say, no, he's going to deny it entirely and say, I don't owe you anything. Because ain't other meyas panim of nei chovo. Now, if ain't other meyas panim of nei chovo, and a person is not going to, if a person's sort of psychology is hardwired, said he's not going to deny that he owes the guy money if he really owes him money. So when he says that I owe you 50, it turns out that on the 50, he's like a meshav aveda, because really he owed him nothing. Because if he owed him the 100, he would have admitted that he owed him 100. Because a person is not hardwired to lie. So he would have admitted that he owed him the 100. He obviously doesn't owe him the 100. He said he owes him 50. That's like a meshav aveda. So v'hai b'kuli boi delich parei, he should have been kofar everything. V'hai delo kofar lei, and the reason that he wasn't kofar everything was mishum deina the meyas panavu, because a person is not meyas panav before his balchov, and says the Gemara, therefore no. It's not like a meshav aveda. In other words, it's only like a meshav aveda where you admit to the entire taina. Over here, when you're being motivated by mitzvahs, it's not like you're doing it because you're such a magnanimous guy, you're so generous, and you're so upstanding. You really want to deny everything. But you can't deny everything, because even if you're a liar and you're crooked, you have a little bit of pride. You have a little bit of self-esteem, and you're not going to just deny a guy who you know loaned you money. So what you're going to do is you're going to say, you know what, I owe you 50. But that's not a Meshav Aveda, because if you were really a Meshav Aveda, you would have said, I owe you 100, not 50. Therefore, it's not like a Meshav Aveda. Therefore, you're going to be required to take a Shvua. Now, flips over to Yud Ches Amud Beis. So if a Kula boy to low delay, and really you should admit that that you owe everything. And the reason that you don't admit to everything, the reason that you only admit to half, is because you're just trying to stall him, you're trying to evade him. And you figure, you know, let's just try to stall him, let's push him off until I come into some money, then I'll pay him back. So the takana of shvuas modem mikzas is, following through this psychology, we're going to force you to take a shvuah because you're going to be too scared to take a shvuah. So when you're forced to take a shvuah, you're going to default to admitting that you owe him everything. And then it's going to turn out that you're going to pay back everything that you really owed your lender. Tosfos over here on top says, "Bekuli boy delode perish bekunshos bab matzia da asal afarej delotema my nishba nema miga de chasher mamona chasherami yashvuasa." So says Tosfos. There's a problem over here because we're talking about a guy who's not the straightest guy in the world because he's like not willing to admit readily that he really owes his friend $100. So he's chasher mamon, meaning he's chasher that he's not going to admit readily when he owes his friend money. But we're going to force him to take a shvua that the 50 that he claims he paid back is legit and that he only owes the guy $50. If the guy is not believed regarding a monetary taina, why are we going to believe the guy legaba yeshvua? So that's why Tosva says elohachi kamer v'chuli boy delo delay velo chashad mamona. That's why the Gemara goes through this whole psychology. In other words, it's not that he's chashad on mamon. It's not that he's failing to admit that he owes the full balance because he's a bad guy, because he's a dishonest guy. It's just simply that he doesn't have the money to pay back. That's why the Gemara goes through the whole psychology to tell me that the guy's not really chashad on mamon to that extent, and that's why we're going to believe him when he takes a shvua. So says Tosfos. Okay, says the Gemara now weiter. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov sabar, and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says, four lines down from the top, sabar lo shana bo v'lo shana bivno, ena meiz, that it doesn't matter whether it's the actual lender making the taina or whether it's the son of the lender saying, hey, you owed my father money, ena meiz, that a person is not going to be meiz panav avnei balchovo, v'hilkach lav kameshav aveda ave, and therefore it's never like a meshav aveda because you would never be meiz panav anyway. In other words, you have to admit to something. Therefore, when you admit to 50, it's not a meshav aveda. Rabbanan Savri, bo hu deina meiz, aval bivno meiz, that a person would not be meiz panav in front of his balchov. And therefore, when the actual lender comes and is towing him, and he admits, that's considered to be meshav aveda. However, by his son, he would be meiz. However, ubedelo heiz meshav aveda ave. And from the fact that he wasn't meiz, by his son, therefore it is like a meshav aveda. In other words, why is a modem a mikzas? The bottom line is, why is a modem a mikzas by the taina of the son like a meshav aveda? So the reason is because when the son comes with a taina, the guy could have said, I don't owe you anything. I thought generally the guy wouldn't say, I don't owe you anything. That's only when the lender comes in his towing. He wouldn't have the fortitude, he wouldn't have the chutzpah to say, I don't owe you anything. When the son comes and is towing him, then he would have the time, he would have the ability to say, he would have the chutzpah to say, I don't owe you anything. And therefore, when he admits that he owes him 50, it is going to be like a situation of meshiv aveda. Okay, next Mishnah. This Mishnah is talking about kiyum shtaros, that there are shtaros which require kiyum. For example, a shtar halva, let's say, if you have a shtar that somebody, that you owe somebody money, or that somebody owes you money, that shtar requires kiyum. You have to verify the signatures on the shtar. Now, there are a couple of ways that you can be mekayim a shtar. Either the edim who are signed onto the shtar could come and say, this is our signature, or other edim who recognize the signature of the edim on the shtar could come and testify that that is their signature, or the beis din could know that this is their signature because beis din has seen other shtari alva with the signature of these edim. But there is some sort of verification process that is required. Now, says the Mishnah as follows, with that background in mind, ha'edim shamru ksav yedenu huzeh, edim who say, this is our signature on the shtar, aval anusim hayu. However, we were signed under duress. We were forced to sign. Ketanim hayu. We were ketanim when we signed. Therefore, it's invalid. Psule edus hayinu. We were pasul edus at that time. Pasul edus at that time doesn't mean that they were mesachei bekuvya, gazlanim, chamsanim. What it means is that at the time we were krovim, now we're not. Now we're no longer krovim, but at the time we were krovim. So, says the Gemara, hareilu nemanim. Says the Mishnah, rather, these people are believed because, again, this is a situation of hapesha asar hu hapesha hiter. The only reason we know that we should verify their signatures is through their testimony. So since the only way we know to verify their signatures is through their testimony, they're also believed to say, oh, even though this is our signature, still it wasn't really valid for other external reasons, for other extenuating circumstances. Says the Mishnah, therefore, vim yesh edim shuksav yadam, this follows the construct of the prior Mishnah, that if there were edim that it was their ksav yad, oshaya ksav yadam yotzim mokam acher, einanem on him. If there were edim that it was their ksav yad, or if the ksav yad goes, if the ksav yad is known from another place, then they are not going to believe, then they are not going to be believed, because again, there is no hapeh sha'asar, because the only time we're going to believe them is because of hapeh sha'asar. Over here, there is no hapeh sha'asar. The Rambam says that they're not believed because of amigo. In other words, they could have said that really this is a shtar halva, but the shtar halva was already paid back. So the reason that they're not believed with that sort of migu, the reason the edim aren't believed with that sort of migu, is because the edim wouldn't be believed with a migu to make a taina that would actually be good for the baal din. The edim are only believed with a migu or with a taina that's relevant to their edus, not with a taina that's relevant to the underlying shtar. So again, the basic halacha follows the halacha that we saw already in the previous Mishnah. If we have a situation of a pesha asar, the edim are going to be believed. If the only way we know that it was their, if there was their signature, and they say, yes, we signed, but, then we're going to believe them with whatever the but is, because the only reason we know it was their signature was their testimony. If, however, independently we knew that it was their signature, now they're not going to be believed to qualify their signature, because there is no pesha asar. Says the Gemara, Amar Rami Bar Chama, Lo Shanu Ela Shamra Anusa Moye Machmas Maman. The only reason this is in the Seifa. Lo Shanu, in other words, Rashi says, Dim Ksav Yadam Yotzim Mavakam Acher Inin Emanim. If we independently verify their signature, the only time they're not believed to say that they signed under duress is where they claim that they signed under duress of Mammon. Aval Anusam Ayim Achmas Tafashos Hareilu Nemanim. However, if they claim that they were Anusam Ayim Achmas Tafashos, then Nemanim. Then they're going to be believed. Why? So Rashi says over here, Eloshamru Anusam Ayim Achmas Eloshanu Eloshamru Anusam Achmas Mammon. The only time they're not believed is when they say that we were bribed, basically, and that's why we signed. And Rashi says, Lav Kol Kiminai Lishvi Nafshe Rishon Be'edis Piyam V'lifsol Asashtar. That they're not believed to incriminate themselves and say that they accepted a bribe, the Adam Korav Eitz Al Atzmo, because a person is a Korav to himself, he's a relative to himself, Vein Neman Al Atzmo, Lo Luschos V'lo L'chova, B'dinin Nefashos, B'sule Eidos, La'asos Rasha, U'pasol Al Piv, that the guy's not believed to incriminate himself, and saying that we signed unethically because we were bribed is incriminating yourself. Therefore, the guy's not going to be believed to say that. However, if they say Anusa Maya Machmas Nefashos, and Rashi explains Shamar Balashtar Hazel Lahargenu the Adam Chazaku, that this guy is a mafioso, and he said that I'm going to kill you. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. You better sign the shtar, and if you don't, I'm going to kill you. That they are going to be believed, because that's not incriminating themselves. They're not making themselves rasham. It's not that they were bribed. It's that they were forced. Says the Gemara, Amar Le Rava, what do you mean? If there were Edim that this was their signature, they would be believed to say that they signed under duress because their lives were threatened. Kol Kamine, Kivan Shegid, Shuvein Echazer Amagid. But once they testify, they are not able to testify again because it says one Haggadah. That's what it says. Im Lo Yagid V'Nasa Avono. Also, this shtar, when their signatures are makuyam, that's their testimony. When they're coming now and saying, oh, but we were under duress because our lives were threatened, that's trying to retract the testimony that they're already given. And kimen she'igid, shuv ein achozer amagid. Rashi over here points out that the only time the Haggadah is considered to be one Haggadah is when the entire Haggadah takes place betoch chidei dibur, which is shalom alecha, Rebbe Yomori, or b'chdei she'la shalom. But of a year, if they're not making the taina within Tok Kedei Dibur, they can't come and undo what's implied in the shtar. Chite Mahani Miliape says the Gemara, well, maybe the Kiva Sheikh Shubain Achozer Amagid is only when they actually verbally testify. Aval b'shtar lo, but by shtar there is no din of Kivan Shegid Shubain Achozer Amagid. Why? Because just listen to the concept. The concept is Kivan Shehigid. It's mashma that they speak testimony. Once they speak testimony, they're not believed to retract it after Tok Kedei Dibur. But maybe if their signature was verified in the shtar, they would be believed to undo it. No, but Edom were assigned on the shtar. It's as if they gave their testimony verbally in Beis Din. So therefore, we should say that Kivan Shehigid Shuvein Achozer Amagid. Now, what it means is this is all going on the Reisha, not where the shtar was independently mekuyam. It is going on the Reisha. Harelu ne'manim, that when they say that this is our ksav yad, but we were anusim, they're believed. Now on that, Amirami Barchama, lo shanu elashama anusim ayimachmas tafashos. The only time they're believed to say that they signed under duress is when they say that we signed under duress, meaning we were fearful for our lives. Aval amru anusim hayinu machmas mamon einemanim. However, if they say this is our signature, but we were anusim, we would not believe them, even though they have a pesha asar, we would not believe them if they said that we were bribed, that we were anusim hayinu machmas mamon. Why? My taima ein adam mesim asmo rasha. Because ein adam mesim asmo rasha, and that's why they're not going to be believed. Tosfos over here says there is a concept that's called palginan dibure, that we know, for example, where a guy says, the famous case in the Gemara is Ploni Ravani Lurtzoni, where obviously that makes him an over on Arayas, so he is going to be believed because we separate out his statement. We say Ploni Ravani, stop, Lurtzoni, and we're going to ignore that. So over here, Tosfos is bothered. Why don't we believe them when they say Anusim Ayinu, stop, and now we're not going to believe them when they say Machmas Mamon. Tosfos says, because the whole concept of Kiyum Shoros is only Midrabanan, and we're not going to be palgina debure by din derabanan, only by a din deraisa. So again, over here we're talking about where they have a pesha asar. The only reason we know that the signature is valid is because of their testimony. Because the only reason we know that it's valid because of them, they're believed to qualify the validity of their signature. That's only when they could qualify it in a way that avoids making them risham. If they're going to make them risham, then we're not going to be believed. All right, we'll stop here. The rabbi's back for a one-day guest shiur tomorrow. He'll pick up tanu rabanan. And I will be back, God willing, Monday through the following Friday until the rabbi is back from Israel. Hope everybody has a great day.